Now, it sometimes feels like a silent disease that no one really talks about, but tuberculosis, also known as TB, is a real and very serious disease that affects your lungs. It spreads from one person to another through tiny droplets that gets released into the air when you cough and sneeze, and that bacteria is what makes you sick, right? And if we look at those numbers, I mean, I still think it is, and I stand to be corrected, and hopefully Kirtan can help me with that. But I think it is the biggest killer in the country. There's also the link between HIV and TB, which Kirtan can go into. But constant research is being done to find out, to find ways in which it can be prevented or even cured, even early detection, which goes a long way. So, Professor Kirtan Dida, thank you very much for your time. Good to have you back.
Thanks, Kino, and good morning to everyone.
And I think it was important to let's first define what TB is. I think we know what it is, right? But what are some of those general facts and figures that we need to be cognizant of?
Yeah, I think you defined it very well, Kino. Essentially, it's a disease caused by a bug called Mycobacterium tuberculosis, which spread through tiny droplets in the air when people cough up these bugs. And it's inhaled into the lungs, where it sets up a focus of inflammation, and those are called it's a characteristic type of inflammation, and they call them tubercles, and hence the name tuberculosis. And as you already mentioned, contrary to popular belief, in many parts of the world, it's far from eradicated. About 10 million cases a year. In fact, in the last two centuries, it's the biggest killer of mankind. Almost a billion people have died from TB. And as you already mentioned, biggest killer in the country. We treat almost 400,000 cases a year. And a couple of aspects worth noting disproportionately affects the economically young active people. Mm. And it's not only the death and the suffering associated with TB. It's a scarring form of disease, so it causes extensive scarring and damage to the lungs. So people suffer for many years after TB is cured. And I think another thing to emphasize from a cost point of view, of course, the suffering and death is most important. But we don't really know what TB costs our country. There are some estimates. And it's thought to impact our GDP by somewhere between 2-3%.
Wow.
Which, if you do some rough calculations, turns out to about almost more than half the health budget, about $10 billion or about 150 billion rand a year. So it's a no-brainer that we need to be aware of TB. We need to put a lot is being done currently by the Department of Health in trying to detect TB and treat TB. But a lot more needs to be done. And I think it's a no-brainer that we need to invest a lot more resources into TB. Mm. And as you said, one of the major risk factors for TB is HIV. And those who are HIV infected are exquisitely sensitive to getting TB. So it's important to know your HIV status. It's important to treat your HIV because by doing that, you markedly reduce your risk of getting TB. The other thing worth mentioning is smoking. Smoking doubles your risk of TB. And because so many people smoke, particularly in the Western Cape, this is a very big driver of TB. So it's another reason why you shouldn't smoke. And of course, poverty and being undernourished is one of the big drivers of TB in sub-Saharan Africa. So obviously, addressing those issues at a macroeconomic level and at a personal level is very important. Mm. But you talked about prevention, and of course, prevention is better than cure. But one of the things that I think is worth mentioning is that a large or significant proportion of the TB is simply undiagnosed. And it's a startling fact. But about 2 out of every 5 TB cases globally is missed or undiagnosed. And and the same in South Africa. We probably have, it's estimated that about 150,000 cases, maybe up to 200,000 cases, are simply not detected. Wow. And these cases are disproportionately found or people residing in large peri-urban informal settlements, shanty towns, slums, whatever you want to call it, and so that's a big problem. And the question is, how do you find these cases? Now, it's quite important to find these cases because that's a TB, as you outlined, is transmitted via the air, via cough aerosol.
Yes.
And currently, the public health strategy that we have in South Africa, in fact, globally, this is a global issue, it's not only a South African issue, is that we wait for people to develop symptoms and then to get to come to clinics or to hospitals where they self-declare, and then the whole pathway to diagnosis starts. And diagnosing TB in itself is difficult, but before we even go into that, by the time people get to clinics and hospitals, they've been having symptoms for several weeks to months, and 95% or more of the transmission has already occurred.
Wow.
So it doesn't make sense for us to wait to diagnose TB. We need to take diagnostics out into the community.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to go out into the community and find the cases. So,
and this is my point, right? Because a lot of, and help me if I'm incorrect in this, because I'm fully immersed in this sort of stuff, but I would imagine that, yes, of course, it's the biggest killer in the country. It probably happens in the poorer, more rural areas. It's concentrated there where you don't have, you know, so many resources, where you don't have people that are able to do chest scans. What about things like artificial intelligence, where you can train a system on a digital X-ray and you can train it to see what a lung what a lung with TB looks like versus a clean one? And you do mobile units that regularly go check, go to the poorest communities and try and get early diagnosis done that way. I mean, is that sort of work being done at the moment?
Yeah, that's. I think that's an excellent question. You know, why aren't we doing this? We should be doing it. And the question really is, what's the best way to do it? I think it's very clear now. We need to go out into the communities and find TB. So one of the things we have done in the Division of Pulmonology, we have a research unit that is looking at this issue of missing cases in detail. And over the last several years, we've put molecular diagnostics. We can diagnose TB a lot more easily now by detecting DNA in a sputum sample.
Mm-hmm.
It's very efficient. And we put this kind of diagnostic onto a mobile truck.
Wow.
And went out into communities. And we went out into Langa, for example, in Cape Town and Guguletu. And in terms of the cases we screened, this is a mobile van going right out into informal settlements. We had a startling detection rate of the group that underwent targeted screening of 10%. That was the pickup rate, 10%, which was extraordinarily high. But you know, it may not be feasible or scalable to do that on a truck with a generator and so forth. So we've now developed a model using a Nissan panel van, and we've got a miniature format of this molecular detection tool called Expert Edge, which we put on the Nissan panel van together with a shelter. Everything fits into the van. It's two healthcare workers. It's scalable, and we've developed this model. We tried it in a study funded by the NIH recently, and we were able to show that it's very feasible to use a small panel van with mobile diagnostics, and
wow,
found the same detection rate of 10%. Having established this model, we are in touch with the Department of Health and the City of Cape Town about this model. And we've just received a substantial grant of about £3 million from the Wellcome Trust and the UK MRC to now evaluate this case-finding model in four different sub-Saharan African countries, including in South Africa. And essentially, we want to show feasibility in other settings. And so that's one example of how we can go out and detect cases. And now you raise the issue of artificial intelligence and computer-assisted X-ray diagnosis.
Mm.
So one, having established this model, one of the key questions we want to look at next is how can we use this technology of computer-assisted screening? So, for example, if we go out into the community, we would, for example, do targeted case finding of people who are either HIV infected or who have symptoms of TB. But what happens if we just subject everyone to a quick digital X-ray?
Yes.
And then use this computer-assisted X-ray diagnosis as a screening tool. In other words, if you come out positive on that, then you go to something more definitive, like getting a sputum sample and being tested for TB. So this is work that we and others are currently undertaking. And the big question is now to find these missing cases. So, you know, unless you find these cases, we're never going to get on top of the TB problem. And so people are asking, what is the optimal way we can screen large numbers of people? We call these screening or triage tools. And at the University of Cape Town, we've developed a urine biosignature. This is a patent now owned by UCT. I'm one of the co-inventors. And we've developed a biosignature where you can look at urine and look at two or three specific markers in urine. This can very easily be done in the future on something like a lateral flow assay, like a pregnancy type of test. And you can do a simple test and screen people on a large scale, and if that test comes up positive, then they get targeted for more definitive testing for TB. And what we envisage is not only taking these diagnostics out into the community, but in fact taking them out to households. And we feel tests like these should be available. You know, they should be testing kiosks out in spaza shops, in supermarkets. You could buy these almost anywhere. And screen for TB. So there's lots of work being done working on screening tests. But right now, we feel that we've developed the scalable model, which we can now take out into communities. But now, of course, the next step is to translate this into policy and practice on a public health level. And we are in touch with the Department of Health through a body called the TB Think Tank, which is an advisory committee to the Department of Health and the Minister. And they are aware of the results of this initiative, and they are also aware of the larger trial that's going on. In fact, they have supported this trial. And so hopefully we can get to a stage soon where we can deploy this technology on a large scale to detect cases.
That's exciting stuff, and a lot happening right here in Cape Town. Hey, now when it comes to actually the new management regime that's in place when it comes to treating someone who already has TB, when you're looking at the types of drugs that are now being used to assist to help alleviate, you know, this particular condition, how's that evolved?
Yeah, so, I mean, the first thing to say is that, you know, taking TB treatment is not pleasant. Firstly, it's 6 months of antibiotics. I mean, as many of your listeners will know, even taking 5 days of antibiotics regularly is so difficult. So you can imagine 6 months, many of these drugs have nasty side effects. So the one priority now is to shorten TB treatment to make it more user-friendly. That also will reduce costs and to make the treatment less toxic. There are several, after a dearth of no drugs for almost four decades, we've got two new TB drugs, bedaquiline and delaminate, that have come out. People are also looking, researchers at UCT and various other universities are also looking at taking existing antibiotics. The main TB antibiotic is called rifampicin, and using much higher doses of this antibiotic. It turns out that the way we're dosing this antibiotic is incorrect, and we could use much higher doses. So the others in the world are doing clinical trials where they're looking at much higher doses of this specific antibiotic to shorten and make TB treatment more efficient. But a lot could be said about research into new drugs and new compounds, and we could talk about that for several hours. The bottom line is we still stuck with the traditional six-month regimen to treat TB. And there is lots of work ongoing to try and shorten that duration of treatment now. The other things to say is that, TB is a very complex disease. Besides the standard form of TB that people really know about, there's also a sleeping form of TB called latent TB. And we know now that we also need to treat that form of TB. That's not been a priority in South Africa because we really focused on active TB, but we're never going to control the epidemic unless we treat the sleeping TB because that reawakens later and cases start popping up and then forming foci of spread. So there are also new approaches to treat and find sleeping TB. And if that wasn't enough, there's also a form of TB, as many of your listeners will know, and you will know that called MDR and XDR-TB. So this is drug-resistant TB, where the bug, like so many other superbugs you find in hospitals, the TB bug has also become a superbug, and it's resistant to the two or three key TB antibiotics we used. And we now, in fact, have incurable strains of TB. Where we cannot treat these strains. So that's already a reality in Cape Town. And there are new drugs such as vedaculine and delaminate that we are using to treat MDR-TB. Previously, you had to take injections for at least 6 months, painful injections, and you had to be treated for 18 months. And already that course of treatment has been shortened now in some cases to as little as 12 months. Various people in the world, our group here in Cape Town has a trial funded through the South African MRC where we have trialed a new regimen with combinations of these new drugs to try and reduce the treatment duration from 12 months to 6 months. But we've already are already seeing resistance to these new drugs. So that really begs the question is of how do we reduce amplification of resistance? Because it seems as, you know, as quickly as we're finding new drugs and new antibiotics, these bugs become resistant to these antibiotics. And we always traditionally blamed the patient and we blamed the healthcare system, right? The doctors weren't prescribing the drugs properly. The Department of Health wasn't doing their job properly and haven't been training the healthcare workers and the patients are not taking their drugs. And that's why we got drug-resistant TB. But a lot of evidence is emerging now that that's not really the case. So, for example, in the Division of Pulmonology, we've done groundbreaking research published last year showing that there's poor penetration of some of these drugs into the thick wall cavities in the lungs. So TB causes inflammation of the lungs and causes what we call liquefactive necrosis, literally causes holes in the lungs. And that's where all the TB bugs reside. They sort of hide away. There's a reservoir of TB bugs. And we've shown now that by actually taking, when patients fail drug-resistant TB treatment, they, in some cases, because we have no choice, we actually surgically removed the lungs or diseased tissue. And we've been looking at that and shown for the first time that with these drugs used to treat drug-resistant TB in cavities, that there's very poor penetration of some of these drugs into cavities. And we probably not dosing these drugs correctly. We probably need to look at ways to better deliver these drugs, for example, inhaled antibiotics in addition to oral antibiotics. So all these notions we had about TB and, you know, resistance developing were only partially correct. I think there's a lot more science to it. And it's an exciting time, but it's also a time where we need a lot more resources and funding to be put into initiatives to look at how we can better deliver and dose drugs. In other words, addressing the issue of resistance amplification. Otherwise, we're going to keep having the same problem. And of course, I'm just giving you one example about how we can address resistance amplification. There's so many other parts to it. and facets to preventing resistance amplification that I won't talk about now.
How open, very quickly, because we literally have a minute and 10 seconds, how open are the traditionalists within medicine when it comes to newer technologies, especially things like artificial intelligence, for example, when it comes to fighting things like TB?
Well, I think at a national level, the Department of Health has to be commended. They've had a very open, they've been very open to new technologies. In fact, South Africa is probably the foremost country where this new DNA-based, diagnostic technology has been taken up.
Yes,
and it's a national standard of care. By and large, I think as a country, we quite receptive to new technologies. A lot of the technology that's also invented overseas with respect to TB is probably trialed here for the first time. Though we in South Africa is probably one of the leading countries in TB research. In terms of the medical fraternity, I think they're quite open to taking up new technologies. But of course, like everything, it's very heterogeneous. There are the early adopters and there are people that take a more traditional view. But TB and many other diseases now are managed at a programmatic level. And so there are national guidelines on how these things should be managed and what technologies work and how they should be taken up. So I think by and large, we are doing a good job and we're doing a lot. But of course, more needs to be done.
There we go. Professor Kirtan Dida, got to leave it there this time for our news. The Professor of Respiratory Medicine and Head of Pulmonology at UCT. Amazing work being done at UCT.